This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Around the corner, ducks down, Ian Book, and we are all tied at 20.
Looney back to Hub for three. Got it again!
That's a Big Ten Tournament championship winner!
From 96.1 WSBT.
The Virginia Cavaliers are the national champions.
Here's Yohe with a steal, gives it up, and Johnson throws it down.
Fires, it's caught, cuts down, T.Y. Hilton.
The sports leader.
Jeffrey! Allow myself to introduce myself.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Styers.
Well, how about 55 million people tuned into the NFL draft Thursday, Friday, and Saturday? Is this country hungry for sports? Woof! Unbelievable. 55 million watching guys in their basements make picks with their families around, and we have videos of the players getting drafted, and that led to 55 million people tuning in to watch the NFL draft, and many of those that were tuned in on Friday saw a handful of Notre Dame players get taken, and we're going to talk about that and more over the next couple of hours. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, our social distancing continues. We are broadcasting from our respective homes. Sean Styers, Darren Pritchett with you. Jerry Janowski producing back at our WSBT studios, and this is day 46 of broadcasting from our homes. And we have a lot to get to. Cole Kmet, the Notre Dame tight end, goes to his hometown team, the Chicago Bears. Pretty much everybody loves this pick, although if you're listening to ESPN radio draft coverage on WSBT radio, one of the ESPN NFL analysts, a former front office member with the Jets and Dolphins, hates the pick. It's one of the worst picks of the year. So we will allow that person to
guy who doesn't have a job in the NFL anymore hates it, by the way.
Correct. Correct. So we'll allow him to explain, and then we'll come back and talk about it. I think there's actually some things he said about the Bears that are fair, but he was really negative toward Cole Kmet. We'll tell you who he is coming up in a matter of seconds. Also coming up on the program, South Bend Adams' Danny Pinter was taken by the Indianapolis Colts in the fifth round on Saturday. Congratulations to him. I believe the fourth player in South Bend Adams High School history to be drafted, the first since Anthony Johnson, the great running back of the Eagles. And Lewis Riddick of ESPN broke down the tape of Pinter, so we're going to bring that back for you at 5:30. And plus, Danny Pinter is going to join us on Sports Beat Wednesday night to talk about being drafted by the Indianapolis Colts. So congratulations to all of his coaches here in South Bend. And the Ball State product goes to the Indianapolis Colts in round number 5. Also, we have some audio from Troy Pride Jr., the newest member of the Carolina Panthers, and he gets to stay close to home to start his professional career. My 5 question of the day, Sean's top 5 moments from episodes 3 and 4 of The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary on ESPN last night. Coming up next hour, more on the Indianapolis Colts draft as we focus on GM Chris Ballard and head coach Frank Reich reacting to the Colts taking a quarterback. And it is Jacob Eason from Washington, pick number 122 overall. So Ballard and Reich, what are the expectations for Eason? Well, it didn't feel like they're that overly high after listening to them. We'll play back that audio, rapid fire. Sean's going to talk a little bit in the 6 o'clock hour about a pretty interesting group of guards that are going to be on the Notre Dame women's basketball team for the 21-22 campaign. We knew Olivia Miles, an elite guard from New Jersey, had recently picked Notre Dame. Well, how about Sonia Citron, a 6'1 guard from New York, and she's considered the 16th best player in the class of 2021. How about those verbal commitments for Neil Ivey in her first week on the job? And those two players were on the USA Basketball Under-16 national team together in the summer of 2019. So all of a sudden, Neil Ivey is telling the world, I am here to recruit and bring in high-level players, and we're going to keep on winning here at the University of Notre Dame. I mean, how about that for a start? Can you ask for anything more in your first week on the job?
I know. I think it had been like 5 days at the most when she got that second commitment. She is reeling it in right now. And they already had a nice recruiting class coming in next year, this upcoming season. But they add two really big-time players, it sounds like, who will be here for the 2020-2021 campaign.
She keeps
us up. The 2021-22. My years are off just like my days right now.
Well, if she keeps this up, she's going to be renegotiating her first contract right away because, yeah, man,
no
what
doubt.
A job so far by Neal. One other news piece I want to get to really quick, and this is from yesterday. Ryan Newman, the South Bend native, says he's ready to go racing once the NASCAR season resumes. Newman was involved in a serious crash at the Daytona 500 on February the 16th. So excellent news, A, on the health of Ryan Newman, and he is ready to get back behind the wheel. It's amazing you got to get back behind that wheel again after what he went through at the Daytona 500, but
yeah.
Those NASCAR drivers and Indy drivers, they have just no fear of what could possibly happen. And we're going to see Ryan Newman behind the wheel again sometime soon. It sounds like that Formula One's going to get restarted in a couple of months, and we'll have to wait to see about NASCAR and IRL here in the United States. Well, Cole Kmet, the Notre Dame tight end, goes to the Chicago Bears. And he is one of six Notre Dame players taken during the three-day NFL draft. Three players were taken in round number two, and it all started with the old Notre Dame tight end, Cole Kmet. And here is how it sounded on Friday.
With the 43rd pick in the 2020 NFL draft, the Chicago Bears select Cole Kmet, tight end, Notre Dame.
Well, we always say take the mock drafts with a grain of salt. You never know what's fact. You never know what's fiction. You never know what teams are saying about a player, whether it's true or not. Is it a smokescreen? Well, the Bears were linked to Cole Kmet by many mock drafters throughout this process. We talked about it a lot, that there is a possibility, but there was always the thought, well, they've got 10 or 11 tight ends on their roster. Do you want to continue to add to that group on the depth chart? Now, they have Jimmy Graham, the free agent signing, which I wasn't a huge fan of, mainly because of the money, and I'm not sure how much is left if he can play at a high level for the Bears, but he is a guy that you can split to the outside and do some damage in the passing game. Cole Kmet's a little different type player, Sean, more of that guy that's going to line up next to the tackle. He's going to be getting into the pit there, helping out with some blocking ability. And we know what he can do as a pass catcher. So at the end of the day, commit to the Bears. Did it make sense for Chicago?
I think it absolutely made sense. And I'll save some of what I'm going to talk about until after we hear the Tannenbaum conversation and some of that. But just in general, you talked about Jimmy Graham. One, he's a little bit different kind of tight end than what Cole Kmet is going to be, whereas Kmet is more the inline Y guy. Jimmy Graham is going to be detached. He's older, as we've talked about. And even a lot of the Bears fans weren't real happy about this because of the not addressing what they perceive as the more immediate need, the offensive line. And I guess to an extent that is valid, that you went out and got a tight end versus an offensive lineman. But seven offensive linemen went off the board in the first round of the NFL draft. And then another went four picks before the Bears made their first pick at number 43 overall. So that's eight offensive linemen. So if you're the Bears sitting there at 43, do you want the ninth best offensive lineman to add to your team, or do you want the best tight end? Because when now granted, they still need some help on the offensive line. But if those are your picks, You're essentially, are you going to draft strictly for need, or are you going to draft the best player available who is still going to make an impact on your team? And when you're talking about an inline tight end, you're still addressing some of that. You've got someone you can throw to. You've also got someone who can help out as a blocker. So I thought it was a good pick. I thought maybe, and I think we talked about this when we were trying to predict where some of the Notre Dame guys might go Friday, I thought maybe the Bears would address something else at 43, and then maybe if a guy like Kmet was there, would get him with their second pick of the second round, but they went the other way around. And really when it comes down to it, they also got the corner, Jalen Johnson. They got two guys in the second round who were both evaluated with first-round talent. So I thought they did pretty well in the second round.
To me, could the Bears live without Cole Kmet? Absolutely. But at the same time, they have swung and missed so much at the tight end position. There's a reason why they have 10 or 11 guys hanging around their roster. They can't find the guys they need that can make a difference with that offense. Now, I question how much that Nagy's going to use the tight end. His first year, we saw the tight end be a little more active. Of course, guys were more healthy that particular season as well. He comes from the Andy Reid coaching tree, and in Kansas City, Travis Kelce is a dominant force. But he and Cole Kmet are not the same type of tight end. You take a look at Kelce and Jimmy Graham. Okay, there's a parallel. I'm not comparing talent at this stage. Obviously, Kelce is much better at this stage of their careers than Jimmy Graham. Graham was that dominant guy a few years ago when he was with the New Orleans Saints and a little bit with the Seattle Seahawks. Kmet is that different type of tight end. Now, you could go get Charles Warner, the tight end from Georgia. He's 6'5", 250. And he's more of a blocking tight end. He had 9 catches last year. So if you want that type of guy, Bears fans, for your football team, then you could have waited until, the 6th round to go get a guy like that. But the Bears are looking for a guy that's going to line up down in the pit that has a little more flexibility. He's going to improve as a blocker. I think we all agree on that. He's got the body frame to do so. And now fully committing himself to football, with baseball now not in the picture, he is going to spend more time on technique and developing his skills. So I fully expect him to be an average or an above-average tight end once he gets more technique into his game with the Chicago Bears. Plus, you gain, unlike Warner, the pass-catching ability. He's got a great catching radius. He's got strong hands. He can fight that football or fight the cornerback for the football. So I think the Bears are in a situation, yes, did they have to take him? Probably not. But offensive tackle, for those people that are wanting an offensive lineman at that spot, I think Brian Driscoll pointed this out, that 16 picks after Kmet, the next lineman was taken. So it wasn't like there was a great value at that point in the draft. So if you want to reach for a third-round grade in the second round at pick 44, then that's just what you probably would have had. But in this case, they're trying to solidify their offense, and they add Kmet to their group. So I like the pick. If they would have went another direction and found a value guy to fill the void somewhere else on the football team, that would have been fine. I wouldn't have complained. But Kmet does fill a need that they're looking for on this football team, a different type of tight end than what Jimmy Graham, the traits he brings to this football team. So,
And I was just going to say, everyone's talking about, oh, they've got 10 tight ends on the roster, and you kind of reference this. Well, one of them is Jimmy Graham, who, as we've said, he essentially plays a different position, and he's now starting the backside of his career. And the rest of the guys are just roster fillers. They signed all these guys, training camp, you know, mini camp type OTA invite type things to see if anybody was going to stick. I would bet that all but probably one of those guys are going to be gone. But by the time it's all said and done, well before training camp is over. I mean, those were just bodies, essentially. Kmet is a guy, as we've said, who's going to be able to help them and address multiple needs, both blocking and pass catching for the Chicago Bears.
So let's give Bears GM Ryan Pace a chance to offer his thoughts on the Chicago Bears taking Notre Dame tight end Cole Kmet. Give a listen.
This is really your classic, you know, wide tight end with the prototypical size and just the athleticism we look for in the position. He's a big target, natural hands. He's really tough after the catch, and he has the strength and the temperament we want in the run game. And really, we feel like his blocking is still improving, so there's a lot of upside in that area. You know, really, with Cole, you know, splitting time between baseball and football early in his college career, like, he's still a young player with a lot of upside. And then you go beyond the physical traits, guys, just the outstanding makeup and the character. You know, our scouts, you know, Scott Hamill, Jeff Shiver, Chris Prescott, are scouts in the Midwest that go through that part of the country. And I thought they did an excellent job on Cole from the jump, just the evaluation process. And we're lucky to have him.
Well, there's no doubt about the character and the work ethic. Komet's going to bring that to this Chicago Bears football team. Again, that was Ryan Pace, the Bears GM, who has done a lot of the swinging and missing on tight ends with the Chicago Bears. And it's a shame they have to continue to try to fix it. Maybe this will lead to not having to worry about the tight end spot for a couple of years with Graham and Komet, just two of the guys right now that can help them at the tight end position. So there's one side of the conversation. So now let's get to what happened on ESPN Radio in their NFL draft coverage Friday night here on WSBT Radio. So the commentary crew was Dari Noka, longtime anchor on ESPN. He was hosting the draft for ESPN Radio. Former NFL linebacker Bart Scott, maybe you remember him with the Baltimore Ravens, and also former Dolphins and Jets front office member Mike Tannenbaum. Those were the three analyzing the picks. Now, Tannenbaum was not a big fan of this selection. So you're going to hear all three voices. It's going to be obvious which one Mike is. He is going to shoot down this pick in a hurry, while Scott is a little more positive about Komet going to the Chicago Bears. So, again, this is from ESPN Radio right after Komet was selected by the Chicago Bears. Dari Noka, Bart Scott, and Mike Tannenbaum evaluate Cole Komet going to the Chicago Bears. This soundbite's about 4 minutes, but it adds a lot of juice to the conversation. They're very passionate about this particular pick, and we'll comment on the backside. So give a listen. This is from ESPN Radio's coverage of the NFL draft. Cole Komet going to the Chicago Bears.
You want to talk about being able to dominate and be easy, friendly throws with that catch radius and that, you know, demeanor, being able to be almost a extra tackle. A lot of people have been comparing him to Gronk. It's not about that he's going to run away from you. It's that what are you going to do when he puts you on his back hip and he's able to catch over you, and you trying to have some of these smaller safeties trying to bring him down. You know, he's going to have to avoid getting chopped down early on. But, I mean, this is a great pick for, you know, what you want to do in Chicago and helping out those young quarterbacks, whoever's going to be that quarterback.
I think this is a shockingly poor pick. They have 8 million tight ends, and they have so many other needs. This blows me away. This is the worst pick of the draft. This may
really?
Be the worst pick in the last. Are you kidding me? They overpaid Jimmy Graham, right?
That's
they
true.
Overdrafted Adam Shaheen. What? And of all the other things they need to do, why, with their first pick, are they adding a guy that can't run? This is mind-boggling to me. What does this solve?
Because Bart, he had eight saves at Notre Dame on the mound 2 years ago? Is that why? I'm not sure.
Dari, I'm with you, man. Hey, Bart, man. Was it like this when you guys were the Jets together where, I mean, he hated your C.D. Lamb, like, best pick first round? Now you're glowing about Cole Komet, and Tannenbaum comes. Your former GM comes back at you saying this is the worst pick so far of the draft.
Because he's going to allow Jimmy Graham to go out and be what Jimmy Graham is, and that's like a glorified receiver and be a matchup nightmare. When you look out, you know, some of the toughest teams we had to deal with was that, you know, that 22 pack personnel, that Tiger personnel. When you have two tight ends out there and you go small, he can be that extra tackle for you and let Jimmy Graham be able to work down the field and try and get open.
But, Bart, you know this from a defensive standpoint. Like, when you know that Komet's on the field, you're not even accounting for him in the passing game. So he's really like another offensive lineman, and I get it. He can help capture the edge. But for this offense where they want to do so many speed sweeps and so many things behind the line of scrimmage, I think he's a poor fit. They put a lot of assets at this position. Some have worked, some have not. Trey Burton, they cut. This confounds me with all the other needs that they have. This is like the last
the
thing
worst.
I thought is that they would have. The worst.
So just let me clarify this. Mike, this trumped what? Kenneth Murray, did that hold the title of worst pick of this draft for you before Komet, or was it?
Rieger was pretty bad.
Rieger's in the But when I had their top three knees come into this as corner, safety, and an interior offensive lineman, I didn't even have this on their radar. I just, when you look at all the other needs that they have on this team, tight end would be like ninth out of eight. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Just on your board, though, just as talent alone, right? I'm agreeing with you. I'm just glad that Mike's fire is back on Bart and not on me. So I'm glad that the bullseye is on Bart Scott. Off of my chest. But I'm amazed.
I think it's on the Bears, frankly, personally.
Well, good point. But I'm amazed that, you know, you got Marlon Davidson still out there. Grant Delpit's still out there. Jeremy Chinn is still out there. And you go Cole Kmet, right?
But don't they have Robert, not Quinn. Yeah, don't they have Robert Quinn now?
They do, from the Cowboys. You have Eddie Jenkins. I get it, you know. But, I mean, I'm just going, how often do you just stick to your board instead of just going for need? Because, look, anybody can need a Marlon Davidson, in my opinion.
Okay, but let's go back to Uncle TB's point, right? You say they need interior lineman help, right? If he's a tackle, he's going to push the original tackle inside. So I win again, Uncle TB.
I don't know about that. Kyle Long.
Yeah. No, go ahead, Mike.
Kyle Long.
No. Kyle Long retires, right? They signed Artie Burns from Pittsburgh, who was a bust. He can't change direction. They are in desperate need of another corner.
Wow.
They let Floyd go, who's an outside pressure player. I just go by what I see. Why would we let the silly facts get in the way of analysis here? There is no objective reason you would take a tight end. Ian, you just gave us six good players that they could have taken.
So Mike Tannenbaum is a big fan of Cole Kmet to the Chicago Bears. We will continue to dive into that.
Well, there you go. There's the complete four-minute soundbite and breaking down of Cole Kmet being drafted by the Chicago Bears. Let me emphasize this again. Now, they're talking about this right after Kmet was taken. Little did, I think, Tannenbaum know that for the rest of the second round, and just for emphasis, Kmet was taken at pick number 43 overall. The end of the second round was pick 64.
Yeah.
So there are 21 more picks in the second round. One offensive lineman was taken, and it was Ezra Cleveland, the tackle from Boise State. He went to the Vikings at 58. And I remember listening to the analysts on NFL Network and ESPN talk about Cleveland, because he was actually a name that was kicked around with my Broncos a little bit. And the people on television talked about how he was a bit of a stretch even to go in the second round. So there's Minnesota possibly reaching for a tackle at that spot. So if Tannenbaum is right, they could use another offensive tackle. I would have been a fan of that. I think they really need another safety as well. Let me leave the safety argument for another second, but the tackle spot, how are you going to fix it at this point? And if you take a guy at that particular pick, it is an absolute reach. If you need an offensive tackle that bad, you can drop back. You can gain possibly another pick along the way if there's a team that wants to trade with you. So, yeah, I would have been in favor of the Bears taking an offensive lineman, but they didn't have a first-round pick. And the high-end guys were gone very early in the first round. And you take a look at the second round, there was one offensive line taken in the entire round. So I think most of the NFL teams, had they need another tackle, someone would have gotten them. Actually, there was a second. Robert Hunt went to the Dolphins at 39. I missed him. But, Sean, you want to go safety? I'm fine with that particular argument. Delpit and Winfield of Minnesota were both on the board, and Chinn from Southern Illinois. Those are three high-end safeties. All of those guys were available when Kmet was taken. Delpit went to the next pick to the Browns. Winfield went to the Buccaneers the pick after that. So, yeah, there was safety value there. I'll live with that argument, but I just don't like the fact that Tannenbaum says Kmet can't run.
Yeah, that's
well, his 40 time at the combine and watching him live, I think we know he's wrong in that particular analysis.
That's, and Kmet ran a 4.7 at the combine. Xavier McKinney, regarded as one of the top safeties in the country, ran a 4.6. So we're talking about a tenth of a second, Darren, a tight end compared to a safety. And he's saying that he can't run and he's disregarding all of his skills. It just baffles me. But I guess it shouldn't, though, because to go back with the first thing that I said about Tannenbaum, he had three winning records when he was general manager of the Jets. The best they ever did was 11 wins. They had a couple 9-win seasons. Show me where Mike Tannenbaum put together legitimate contending teams. He had Rex Ryan for a couple of years. They did pretty, you know, as the head coach, they did pretty well together. But show me where Mike Tannenbaum put together consistently legitimate contending New York Jets teams. And the division was there. Besides the Patriots, the division was there to be consistently good behind the Patriots. But he never put together a consistently good product on the field. So I just, I, His comments to me are just completely off the mark.
Not accounting for Kmet in the pass game, that would be a huge mistake. Again, he is not Kelce. He is not that type of guy we're seeing across the NFL, kind of the basketball players playing the tight end spot that you can line up on the perimeter. That's not him, and the Bears know that. They are looking for more of the more balanced tight end. They've got their guy for now, Graham, playing the outside. And you take a look at Kmet, I think there was a huge drop-off at the tight end position as well in that area that they're looking for. So, again, if you want to go safety, I don't think anybody would have complained. But to go after Kmet for saying he can't run, you don't have to account for him in the passing game, I think are absolute misreads on his part. I do not like the comparison to Gronk, though, other than maybe you have to take him down by his knees. I guess that's a comparison, but I don't think there's a whole lot to match up there at this particular time of Cole Kmet's career. Maybe he can develop into some other areas, but Gronk was a special player, and he was a Hall of Famer. He's going to be a Hall of Famer once he ends up retiring for a second time.
Again, and Ryan Pace said this, Cole Kmet is not going to be Gronk or Kelce. When you're thinking Cole Kmet, I mean, those tight ends have sort of redefined, and even Jimmy Graham in his prime sort of redefined the modern perception of what the tight end is. Cole Kmet is going to be the inline Y guy, as Bart Scott said, the extra tackle who's going to have a good catch radius, who can go out and do a lot of different things for you. You've got to think more in the lines of Jason Witten, Kyle Rudolph, when you're sort of perceiving or conceiving of what Cole Kmet is going to be. And I'm not talking about Jason Witten in the last 5 years after he had lost, 10 steps, essentially. I'm talking about Jason Witten in his prime, when he was both an inline guy and outside, when he was going to catch 90 to 100 passes, 800 to 1,000 yards. Kyle Rudolph right now, 50, 60 catches, 500 to 800 yards. That's much more what Cole Kmet is going to be. He's not going to be this dynamic, explosive, downfield guy. He's going to find soft spots in the zone. He's going to get open. You can throw the ball to him. He's going to move the sticks, and every once in a while, he's going to make some explosive plays for you. And he's still got some room on his frame to fill that out as well in terms of blocking and all that. But the Bears had six tight ends who caught passes last year in their offense. Trey Burton, 14 receptions, 84 yards. Jesper Horsted, 10 catches, 87 yards. Those were the top two guys. Cole Kmet could blow right past that this year. He could easily be 40 to 50 catches and around 400, 500 yards and a few touchdowns for you.
Yeah, maybe Cole Kmet becomes Anthony Fasano. Pretty solid blocker, dependable pass catcher. I think he can be a better blocker than Rudolph. He won't be as good of a pass catcher as Rudolph. And that's not a negative. Not a negative. Okay.
Not at all.
One more soundbite on this subject. Here is Bears GM Ryan Pace on how Kmet fits in with the guys already on the roster, including Jimmy Graham.
This is really your classic, Y tight end with the prototypical size and just the athleticism we look for in the position. He's a big target, natural hands. He's really tough after the catch, and he has the strength and the temperament we want in the run game. And really, we feel like his blocking is still improving, so there's a lot of upside in that area. Really, with Cole, splitting time between baseball and football early in his college career, he's still a young player with a lot of upside. And then you go beyond the physical traits, guys, just the outstanding makeup and the character. Our scouts, Scott Hamill, Jeff Shiver, Chris Prescott, are scouts in the Midwest that go through that part of the country, and I thought they did an excellent job on Cole from the jump, just the evaluation process, and we're lucky to have him.
Pace, Bears GM, his thoughts on how Kmet will fit in with Jimmy Graham and the other tight ends currently on the roster, and our thanks to Mike Tannenbaum for bringing a little fireworks to the pick of Cole Kmet to the Chicago Bears. Sean and Darren with you, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. When we come back, ESPN analyst Lewis Riddick evaluates the tape of South Bend native Danny Penner, who was taken by the Indianapolis Colts. Plus, you'll hear from Irish corner Troy Pride Jr. staying close to home to play for the Carolina Panthers. That's all coming up in our next segment. It is 5:35 Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from Home on 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. Sports Beat from Home continues 5:40 on this Monday evening. Sean and Darren with you. If I could have just your attention for one moment, I want to pass this along a very important piece of information. It's May Day for Michiana, a one-day fundraising effort by Midwest Family of South Bend, our WSBT radio group this Friday, May 1st, to assist the incredible needs during this time of uncertainty for the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Due to the many reasons during this COVID-19 outbreak, people are struggling. The demands on the Food Bank of Northern Indiana are as great as ever before. How can you help? You can visit feedindiana.org, that's feedindiana.org, and make a donation. A $5 donation provides up to 20 meals, $10 provides up to 40 meals, and $25 will provide up to 100 meals. Or the next time you're shopping at a local Martin supermarkets, pick up a few extra items and place them in the donation bin by the exit. For more information, go to WSBTradio.com. Well, coming up on Wednesday's program, we're going to have the chance to talk to South Bend native and newest member of the Indianapolis Colts, Danny Pinter, who played for the Ball State Cardinals and had a chance to play Notre Dame a couple of years ago at Notre Dame Stadium. He was taken by the Colts at pick number 122 in the draft, or actually 149 for the Indianapolis Colts. So we'll talk to Danny coming up on Wednesday's program. But he was taken by the Colts in the fifth round. And here was ESPN analyst Louis Riddick's evaluation of Danny Pinter.
Louis, yeah.
A very good athlete, 6'4", 306 pounds. Has ran 4.91 in the 40. He just has short arms. Otherwise, you'd be talking about him as a tackle, which is what he played at Ball State at right tackle. Very good initial quickness. Can really run. Has real good competitiveness. Can really reach and cut off front side and back side. He can get up to the second level. He has some nasty to him. He really likes to finish. Likes to play the game in a competitive way. This is a guy, again, if he had longer arms, you would definitely project him to play a tackle in the NFL. But as it is, he'll play goal.
Okay, so that was some of the commentary of Louis Riddick on Danny Pinter. He mentioned the short arms, which means he'll move from tackle to guard in the NFL. Well, Danny, we are rooting for you, but the left guard position's in pretty good shape in Indianapolis with Quentin Nelson there.
Very true.
But he could be a very valuable backup piece right off the bat for the Indianapolis Colts. And this was a young man, Sean, from what I understand, he was a pretty good tight end back in the day at South Bend Adams.
Yeah, he did, and we talked about him when Ball State came here last year. My son was a teammate of his. They both played against Drew Tranquil in a sectional championship game in what would have been Danny's sophomore year. And he actually started his high school career as a tackle. His older brother, Matt, was a tight end. And then after Matt graduated, I think was around the time that Danny moved to tight end. And he's 6'4", and he's just always had that really long frame that I remember Brian Kelly sort of talking about this last year when it came after his recruiting class signed. They're looking for the players with those long athletic frames that can fill out after they get into a college weight program. And that's kind of what it was for Danny Pinter. He was probably in the 210, 215 range his sophomore year when he was playing tackle. And then by the time he left high school, he was around 230, I think. And now he's up to 306 pounds, so he has really filled out after he made that transition to tackle down at Ball State. And to put what Louis Riddick was talking about into perspective with the short arms, both he and Zach Martin are 6'4". Martin has 32 7/8 inch arms, whereas Pinter is 31 7/8. So
wow.
Martin, who of course played tackle also in college and moved to guard when he got to the NFL, has one more, his arms are 1 inch longer, his wingspan, than Danny Pinter. So that kind of, I think, puts it in perspective why, you know, they see Pinter as moving inside. But again, I think I heard Chris Ballard even say maybe center is where he could end up. So it's going to be really interesting. It sounds like the Colts really think a lot of him, and they see him potentially as kind of a swing guy at some different positions in those interior positions mm-hmm. there.
All right, so again, Danny Pinter from South Bend Adams High School, taken by the Indianapolis Colts. Thanks to his great play at Ball State, he's going to join us on the program Wednesday night. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio and the Sports Beat app. Back to Notre Dame players taken in the NFL draft. We're going to spend more time on these guys throughout the week, but let's just get some quick reaction. Wide receiver Chase Claypool off the board at pick number 49, a second-round selection of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and it turned out to be the first pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 2020 draft. They go with Chase Claypool, 6'4", 238, and that sparkling 4.42 40-yard dash down to the combine in Indianapolis. And he was a guy we talked a lot about. Could he go late first round? Some people said third round. This makes a lot of sense. In the second round, you don't pass up 6'4", 238 with that speed. Very tough to bring down to the open field. Very physical. And, of course, the strong hands and another wide catching radius. The Pittsburgh Steelers have gone through, it seems like, a lot of wide receivers through the years, but normally when they pick a wide receiver, it turns out very, very well. I guess you can argue how it turned out with Antonio Brown, but when he was playing just football and wasn't involved in all the other stuff away from the field, a dominant player, maybe the most dominant player in the NFL, Emmanuel Sanders, Schuster, now their top wide receiver. So Claypool joins a long line of guys the Steelers are drafting to play the wide receiver position, and I don't think we have to worry about him playing tight end in Pittsburgh.
No, and it sounded like Steelers people are really excited about Chase Claypool, and they see him as a legitimate number one type receiver in the NFL. And with that offense they have, it's going to be fun to see what he's able to do there with Ben Roethlisberger, as long as Ben's still upright and still able to play. He missed a lot of time last year.
Third round pick 67, edge rusher Julian Okorah goes to the Detroit Lions. Such a cool story. Gets to play with his brother Romeo in Detroit. It's the first time they've ever played together. They missed by a year in high school and a year at the University of Notre Dame. But the incredible athleticism. He's got long arms, which we just had a discussion about, an offensive lineman having shorter arms. Well, Okorah has those long arms, and with that explosiveness, even though he had the off year with the Irish last fall, there's still tremendous upside, and I think there's pretty good value for Detroit in round number three, taking Okorah at that spot.
No, I think so as well. He's a guy who I thought had a chance to go in the second round, and as we've talked about, if he had a bigger year and didn't have the injury this year, he maybe even had a chance to go in the first round. So getting Okorah in the third round is really good for the Detroit Lions. And fun for him. I'm wondering, will they get a chance to play with each other, he and Romeo, or will they be competing for the same job with the Detroit Lions?
No question. Something to think about, that's for sure. Yep. The Carolina Panthers took Troy Pride Jr. He was a round four selection, pick number 113 overall. We all know about the tremendous speed, the 40 time. He has the makings of a really good corner. I've just been a little hesitant to jump on board as a starter in the NFL in the first couple of years because I think he has still some work to do in finding the football, and I wonder how good he can become as a cover guy. But in round four, I think that makes a lot of sense. We saw some mocks where he was going in the 70s, the early 80s. I thought that was a little early. 113 might be a tad bit late, but I think Carolina sees a guy with a lot of upside, and if they can help him find the football a little better in the air and improve his cover skills, that speed is tough to pass on.
No, absolutely, and that's what he has is some speed, and fun for him that he gets to stay close to home, close to his family. I saw where there was a parade. The people in South Carolina, his hometown in South Carolina, did a little parade going past his house. So he's going to get to stay close there and play for the Panthers.
Quick soundbite from CarolinaPanthers.com. Their reporter, Kristen Balboni, talking with former Notre Dame corner, Troy Pride Jr.
Troy, you are to Greer High School, hour and a half away from Charlotte. What does it mean to join the Panthers?
It means everything. To stay home, to be close to my family, to have the Carolina Panthers believe in me in the first place is something that, I'm going to And from that, you know, they're going to get everything out of me. They're going to get, you know, the best work ethic, you know, I'm going to get all the potential, everything that, you know, I have, I'm going to give to the organization.
Is it true you won tickets to a game as a kid? And then could you ever imagine that one day you'd be playing on that field?
Yes, I believe the tickets were from D'Angelo Williams. And no, I couldn't. You know, it was a time where I was just, you know, at a football game and having fun with my friends was kind of cold. So it was pretty interesting. But, you know, now to be playing on the field and have that opportunity is a blessing, you know, and I could have never imagined it.
Yeah. How excited were your parents that you're going to be close to home? I know you're there celebrating with them right now.
Yeah, they're crazy excited. You know, they're still running around the house doing everything they do. But, you know, yeah, they're very excited. They know I'm a worker. They know I'm a hard worker, a humble worker. And they can't wait to come to the games.
We can't wait to have them there. Okay, so you said that you're interested in broadcasting. It's part of what you went to school for. Give me your broadcast analysis of Troy Pride Jr. What does he bring into the Panthers?
Well, I think Troy Pride is a tenacious defender that couples that with elite speed and intelligence on the football field. Truly, his football intelligence, FBI, has continued to grow each and every year from his freshman year. And now, you know, putting that with the technique and the smaller aspects of the game will continue to allow him to have success and a future All-Pro cornerback, in my honest opinion. So,
from Panthers.com, that is former Notre Dame corner Troy Pride Jr., the latest member of the Carolina Panthers. Edge rusher Khalid Kareem went to the Bengals, a great value pick in the fifth round. Aloy Gilman, the safety, to the Chargers in the sixth round. More on those guys as the week proceeds. My five question of the day centers around The Last Dance, coming up next from 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Sports Beat from home, Sean and Darren with you. Today's My Five, Sean's top five moments from episodes 3 and 4 of The Last Dance on ESPN last night. It is the Michael Jordan documentary. We start with number five.
Well, we all know about Michael Jordan's shot over Craig Elo in the playoffs, the Cleveland Cavaliers. Ron Harper's reaction to his head coach Lenny Wilkins in those 89 playoffs, because Harper had been guarding Michael Jordan and he wanted to guard Jordan on that last play and what turned out to be the game-winning shot over Elo, but Lenny Wilkins told Harper that he was going with Elo, and Harper's response was, F that BS, and the rest is history.
So you were watching the ESPN version where there's a little more colorful commentary.
Yes,
the
ESPN we got the whole version. Thing. Yes, that's right.
All right, number four.
How losing to the Pistons in the 90 playoffs drove the entire Bulls team to get better and stronger that offseason. They were just bullied and pushed around by the Pistons for 2 years, and we got the backstory of the origin of the Jordan rules, which is how Detroit just physically manhandled and shoved, and what their approach to guarding Michael Jordan was, and it led him to lifting weights, and he put on about 15 pounds of muscle that offseason.
Going through the top moments of The Last Dance last night on ESPN, number three.
The story of how Doug Collins was fired as head coach, I'd never really heard that story. Phil Jackson ends up becoming named head coach, but, you know, Collins had success. He and Jordan got along really well, but Jackson and Tex Winter were both assistants for Collins, and the Bulls wanted Collins to use Winter's triangle offense, but Collins didn't want to do it, so they let him go. They promote Jackson. He fully embraces the triangle, and the result, Jordan's scoring average goes down, but other guys like Pippen, Paxton, they produce more, and ultimately the team wins a lot more.
Okay, number two.
Bulls general manager Jerry Krause's airplane dance after the Bulls beat the Pistons in the 91 Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, Krause is essentially like the little teapot, short and stout, like the song. So he just looks, he's got some adult beverage in his hand, and he looks pretty funny doing his happy dance. Just go online and Google it, I guess, if you want to see it.
And finally, the number one moment from The Last Dance last night on ESPN.
Dennis Rodman's days off. In the middle of that 97-98 season, Scottie Pippen has just come back from injury, and so Dennis Rodman wants some time off. He asked Phil Jackson for a couple days off to go to Vegas. Jackson brings in Michael Jordan to ask him what he thinks. Jordan says, look, Phil, if we let him go to Vegas, he's not coming back. But Jackson ultimately lets Dennis Rodman. They give him 48 hours, a 48-hour pass to go to Vegas. Well, guess what? 48 hours, more than 48 hours pass. Rodman doesn't come back. It's like two more days after that. Michael Jordan has to go to Rodman's hotel in Vegas, brings him back, and then Jackson at the next practice wants to run this drill to get Rodman back in shape, but Rodman is outrunning everyone else on the team instead. So it was quite a story. They need to dig up the old footage and do a full episode on Dennis Rodman's time in Vegas.
Wow, very interesting. Okay, that's the My Five. I guess that was load management before load management.
There you go.
We'll take a timeout. Sports Speed back in a moment on WSBT. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sports Beat from home on this Monday evening. Sean and Darren with you. The Colts took a quarterback in the draft. You'll hear from Ballard and Reich on that subject in a moment. It is 6 o'clock WSBT South Bend.
Welcome back to another hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Touchdown Notre Dame! 70 yards, Book to Lindsey.
He gets it out to Leshesky for three.
Got it! He got it! Caught for the win, Kyle Rudolph!
From 96.1 WSBT.
Justin Fisher heading for the touchdown, his sixth of the night.
The Washington Nationals are World Series champions.
And that's a South Bend Cup Midwest League championship winner.
And the kick is good for the win. Pinheiro with the De Niro kick.
The sports leader.
And look who's coming up.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
This is the second hour of Sports Beat for this Monday, April the 27th of 2020. Live on 96.1 WSBT and on the Sports Beat app, it is Sports Beat from home. Along with Sean Stiers, I'm Darren Pritchett, Jerry Janowski producing back in our WSBT studios. Hope you had a terrific Monday. Thank you for joining us. We're going to get to some Colts audio in just a moment in regard to the drafting of quarterback Jacob Eason. I just want to mention this topic. This is something we can get more into as the week goes on. But Jeff Passan, who has been working with ESPN the last couple of years in regard to a lot of good baseball storylines, he's been really out front on this COVID-19 possibilities that Major League Baseball is taking a look at. And there is the belief in a new Passan story that Major League Baseball will occur this year. They are going to make it happen. So that's a huge positive. But what the negative could be, and this is again from Jeff's latest story at ESPN.com, he does not believe that minor league baseball will take place this year. The basis of that discussion centers around, I think, a couple of things. First off, if baseball is going to avoid playing in hot spots, if they're going to possibly do one of the models where they play in Arizona, Florida, Texas, or some combination, everyone's going to be quarantined to an area. And you're going to be able to have short bus trips. They're going to have hotels where the guys are going to be staying at. Minor league baseball, there's a lot more travel that would be involved. Now, the Midwest League has less travel than a lot of leagues, but there are still some pretty good distances you would have to travel. For example, South Bend in our division, it's about 5 hours and 45 minutes to go to Bowling Green, Kentucky. It's over 5 hours to go to Eastlake, Ohio to take on Lake County. You also have a trip to Dayton mixed in there. And going up to Great Lakes, that's over 3 hours, if I remember correctly, going up there. So there might be more challenges in minor league baseball. Plus, here's something else that Passan points out, that if Major League Baseball plays, they will likely have expanded rosters because, A, they may not be able to wait long enough to get the pitcher's arms strong enough, so you might have some spring training looking outings from starting pitchers early on in the year. Maybe guys only go 2, 3, 4 innings right off the bat. So to account for that, pitchers that would probably be in the minors are going to start in the majors with expanded rosters. So obviously, Sean, there's the trickle-down effect. Guys at AAA might be in the majors. Guys that should be at AAA, or I should say in AA, they're going to move up to AAA and on down the line, which obviously affects South Bend, who is kind of near the bottom of the food chain with the way Major League Baseball may want to change the minors going forward. So Passan believes that when asked, so the minor leagues, are they going to happen this year? He wrote, probably not, nope. So that is obviously something to keep in mind. And again, if Major League Baseball is not going to play in their cities, I guess it's hard to imagine that would happen in the minor leagues as well.
Right.
Now, he did point out there's a chance you could just send all the minors to the spring training facilities and you could have games down there. But he makes it sound like, and again, this is Jeff's opinion, but he is well tuned in, that in his opinion, there would not be minor league baseball this year, which obviously affects the South Bend Cubs, the Midwest League. It affects us with WSBT Radio bringing you all the South Bend Cub games each summer. So this is something to keep in mind. It is Jeff's story. There are not direct quotes from Major League Baseball involved in this particular piece, nor the heads of minor league baseball. But from what he is hearing, that is what he wrote, that are the minor leagues going to happen this year? He wrote, probably not, nope. So that's something to keep in mind. But it's something I've been thinking a lot about and looking at Major League Baseball's plans. I just didn't know how that would work at the minor league level, the cost involved. I mean, Major League Baseball is doing quite well, despite how they act sometimes. You know, minor league baseball is a lot more difficult. It's a business. The owners are trying to make money. South Bend's in really good position, but there's a lot of teams in the Midwest League, without going into names, that just don't have the financial backing that, for example, South Bend or Fort Wayne might have. So you just wonder how this was all going to work out for the minors. And this is really the first time I've seen someone write that there's a chance where we might not have minor league baseball this year.
Yeah, and it sounds like just the big picture, everything is going to be about getting Major League Baseball going this year. But just all the things that you touched on right there, it just sounds like it is going to be, from a logistical standpoint, nearly impossible to be able to get minor league baseball rolling just because of the way that guys have to live every day. You can't house an entire minor league in the same small area like you potentially could split up 32 major league teams when you're talking about hundreds of minor league affiliates. It's unfortunate, but it just sounds like most of the emphasis is going to be on trying to salvage something out of the big league level this year.
Well, unless major league teams got involved, it just doesn't seem possible to even think about what you just mentioned there. If you have maybe six teams in one city, I mean, the cost to house all those players for an entire, I wouldn't say an entire summer. We're not going to have an entire summer worth of baseball. But
even
unless,
if it's a couple months.
Well, even if Major League Baseball would have to pick up the tab, each team, or that's just not feasible.
Right.
Just considering there's going to be no revenue coming in for the teams that are bringing their players to that city. I mean, where's the revenue going to come from to pay for all that? Because they're not going to have any home games. They're not going to have concessions. They're not going to have parking. So it just doesn't seem possible. That's the way I've kind of thought through this while this has been developing. And unless Major League Baseball gets involved, it just doesn't seem likely something like that could be pulled off at the minor league level.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I mean, we have enough hotels in South Bend. We have a great facility. I don't know if you can involve Notre Dame's facility into something like this. We're an area that could pull it off since we have all the hotels from Notre Dame and other things that go on in our area.
That's
but
true.
Who's going to pick up the bill for all those hotel costs? I don't know.
Hotel costs and feeding everybody on a daily basis and staff and everybody else. Yeah, there's just so much that would have to go into it.
All right, we can talk more about this as the week goes on, but I wanted to throw that out there. Jeff Passan had the story on ESPN.com, and really for the first time, some negativity about minor league baseball happening again. It's his piece. Major League Baseball, that part of the story is not quoted in any fashion, but he's really the first guy to kind of come out and say, well, this may not happen for the minors this year. We'll stay positive. We hope something will work out. And as we know, things change from day to day. I don't think any of us probably thought 3 weeks ago things would be opening up like things are apparently going to happen to parts of the country over the next week or two. So this thing changes daily. Who knows? Maybe we'll have minor league baseball, but something we can talk about as the week goes on. But that was a little bit of a downer when I read that this afternoon. Okay, more on that in coming days. But let's get to the Indianapolis Colts. A fun draft for the Colts. It's always fun when you get skill position players, you know? Even though that's not necessarily the way you win championships. You need those guys in the trenches to get the job done. But it's fun when you're taking quarterbacks, wide receivers, and running backs. And boy, the Colts were busy on day two. Michael Pittman Jr., the wide receiver from USC, running back Jonathan Taylor of Wisconsin, and Jacob Eason from the University of Washington went at pick number 122 to the Indianapolis Colts. Colts GM Chris Ballard, head coach Frank Reich, met the media at the conclusion of the draft, and here is what Ballard and Reich had to say about the Colts going for quarterback Jacob Eason out of the University of Washington.
That's a good question. So we spend a lot of time lining this board up. I brought it up today. Say, look, we're, you know, once we'll take a couple of days and then we're off to 2021 draft. That's what we're going to be working on. So we spend all this time lining the board up and we don't force it. We put them to where we think their value is for our team. And at that point, Jacob was on the board and was at the right value where we had him placed, and that's why we took him.
Kevin Bowen for Frank Reich.
Frank, what attracted you to Jacob? He mentioned some one-on-one time you guys had, maybe over Zoom or something, about pass protections and going over some of that stuff. But what was your kind of one-on-one interaction and what did you see on film?
Saw a guy who has all the physical tools to play the position, size, strength, really good arm talent, can make all the throws to all spots on the field. You know, for a big man, I think he has some athleticism to him. Not that he's a scrambler guy. I mean, I think he's a pocket passer, but has athletic ability to move and just think, you know, he's still young and developing in the position. You know, he doesn't have a lot of miles logged in one respect. You know, so could have came back another year, but really we get a chance to, you know, he gets a chance to compete with Chad and see if he can continue to develop. But we certainly saw some tools there that I think that he has some of the qualities it takes to play at this level.
Ballard and Reich on Eason. This was a five-star quarterback coming out of high school. He had all the press clippings and a kid that everybody wanted coming out of high school. Well, he got bypassed at the University of Georgia, and he is a guy that ended up at Washington and had a nice run at Washington. I would not say a spectacular career with the Huskies, but he ended up being a fourth-round pick. I think a lot of people had him pegged as a second or third rounder, and with the way drafts go and with needs, he fell all the way to pick number 122. He was taken before Fromm. So I think this is one of those, hey, let's give it a shot, fourth-round pick. Oftentimes, when you get to the fourth round, the chances of a kid making a roster start to get a whole lot smaller. So you take a chance on a quarterback with good size. He's got the arm strength, and he's been through a lot with all the pressure being a five-star, having to change colleges, go into a new system. So he has dealt with a lot of stuff. So I'm sure the spotlight of the NFL is probably not going to be overly intimidating. But I think at this point, the Colts are going to take a chance on a guy that looks the part, but there's still a lot of roughness to his game, which led to him not becoming that full-time starter before going to the University of Washington.
Yeah, and to add to your list of some of the things, I mean, just the name that he had as well, being the son of your guy Tony Eason. Yeah. You know, he came along with the name there, the former Illinois guy who himself was a first-round draft pick back in that famous draft, the Elway to Marino draft, as a matter of fact. But there is some irony in the fact that he was replaced by Jacob Fromm, and then despite the fact that he didn't have huge success in college, was picked in front of Jacob Fromm when it was all said and done. But I like when you go back to what Chris Ballard said, that they've got their board. They didn't force it. He was there, and they picked him. And it's something that really applies to what we were talking about with the Bears as well. They didn't force the issue because maybe they needed an offensive lineman, picking an offensive lineman somewhere well above slot. They went with the highest rated tight end in Cole Kmet. And again, the Colts, they weren't going to reach for a quarterback in the fourth round if they didn't have the right guy there. But Eason was sitting there, and where they are right now, he's in a position where he can essentially come in, be in training camp, hold a clipboard for a year. You've got both Phillip Rivers, you've got Jacoby Brissett. You can see what you've got from the guy during camp, and it's just a nice solid selection. And if things don't work out, you can always go back and draft another quarterback next year or the year after that.
Hey, as we all know, when our team drafts a quarterback, you get a little excited because they're tough to find, and you hope maybe you've found your next guy. I don't think any Patriot fan expected when Tom Brady was taken at pick number 199 20 years ago that he would end up being one of the greatest players in NFL history. If they figured that out, then they should be probably working at ESPN Radio instead of Mike Tannenbaum. Hey, it's a lightning rod position, and you get excited, and immediately, hey, is this going to be the next guy? Well, of course, one of the Colts reporters asked GM Chris Ballard if Eason could be a building block for the future for his franchise, and here is how Ballard handled that.
Well, he's got talent, but there's a long way to go. He still hadn't even put on a Colts uniform, and like any of them, you know, they got to earn it. You know, right now he's competing with Chad Kelly. Phillip Rivers and Jacoby are our first two, and Jacob and Chad are competing for the three spot. I mean, let's slow our roll a little bit in terms of, you know, tagging this guy as the next Messiah walking into town. He was a fourth round pick. We didn't move up to the first pick of the draft. Jacob's got talent. He's got to work, and he's got to earn it.
Okay, Stephen Holder for Coach Rob.
All right, so that was rather interesting. Really, the question wasn't that violent, but I think Ballard was setting the tone. Phillip Rivers. We still have Jacoby Brissett. They still have Kelly on the roster, so hold everything. He's just a fourth-round pick, but a guy with some possibilities. So I don't think anybody will complain if you waste, quote-unquote, waste a fourth-round pick on a quarterback. I think there is a lot of reason to take a shot in this particular spot. Plus, let's keep in mind, in 2021, there isn't a quarterback on their roster currently that is under contract for that season.
Yeah, very true. And I think a lot of people are looking at these like when the Bears, again, kind of put it back to them, when they gave up a fourth-rounder for Nick Foles, it was like the world stopped. Oh, you're giving up a fourth-round pick, and it's you're getting into that range where if you're a fourth-round guy, you're by nature going to be a bit more developmental. So there's a lot of things that still have to play out for Eason. It's not like all of a sudden he's going to turn around next year and he's got the job. And like Ballard said, they didn't trade into the first round to get this guy. He's still a fourth-round pick, so slow the roll and let the guy develop, right, and see what you get from him.
Final soundbite for the Colts today on the drafting of Jacob Eason. Here's head coach Frank Reich on the ability of Eason.
I think his arm talent was probably the best in the draft as far as the quarterbacks go. And what I liked about his arm talent is, you know, he can throw it on a rope, he can throw it long, he can throw with touch, he can change the speed on the ball, and he can deliver from different arm angles. The accuracy was fine. He needs to get better. His footwork needs to get better. Reading through his progressions needs to get better. There's a lot of things that need work, but physically he has a lot of the tools. But we all know that playing this position is a lot more than physical. So So that's why we spent some time with him, you know, as far as the meetings and protections and just trying to test the mental acumen of this position and try to get an idea of, you know, how they think as a quarterback. And we would do that with anybody. I mean, we do that. I talked to multiple quarterbacks, you know, during this process, and it was the same process with every one of them. And so Jacob did a nice job. And but like Chris said, there's still a long way to go. There's a long.
Again, 2021, no quarterback currently under contract. Could be a very cheap, money-wise, backup quarterback. If Rivers works out, you bring him back for another year. You can move on from Jacoby Brissett if they see enough in the ability of Eason. So a chance to save a little money along the way. I mean, Brissett's a pretty expensive backup quarterback at this particular time. So, Sean, elsewhere of interest, I mentioned Pittman to the Colts in round two, Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin in round two, and then safety Julian Blackman from Utah in round number three. That was a need for the Colts going into this draft. I'm just going to pick out Pittman. I think Pittman is a guy that in a normal draft year could have been a late first round pick, if not middle of the first round. I think he has high end talent. This is a guy that never drops the football. If you throw it to him, he's going to catch it, known as a good route runner. And let's keep in mind, when Notre Dame played USC this year, Brian Kelly was not going to let Michael Pittman beat him. They had a safety over the top. They double-teamed him whenever possible, and they were not going to let Pittman to be the dominating force in that football game, and they achieved that goal as Pittman was very quiet against the Fighting Irish. So I think that is a sneaky good pick by the Colts, picking up Pittman to go along with T.Y. Hilton as they reformulate that wide receiving core in Indianapolis to go along with Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, I think you're right. He easily could have been a first-round guy, and he's a nice addition for them in the first pick that they ended up having in the draft there at number 34. I like what they did with those second and third-round picks. For sure, they add to the offense. Jonathan Taylor, one of the top running backs in this draft, and then helping the secondary as well. And there was that talk going into the draft that they could trade the other safety, Malik Hooker. That never happened. Maybe he's still on the market out there. Who knows? But I thought they had a really solid draft for what they had with the picks that they had.
Jonathan Taylor, boy, that's really intriguing what he was accomplishing with the Wisconsin Badgers.
Putting behind another good O-line.
Oh, my goodness. You put him and Mack together, that is quite a 1-2 punch in a Colts run game that was above average last year in the National Football League. I believe they ended up seventh in rushing in the NFL with that line coming back, a better quarterback to help the running game. And you add Taylor to go along with Mack, that is really intriguing. So I went into the draft thinking the Colts were the team to beat in the AFC South, despite Houston and Tennessee coming off really good years. And this has really added to that thought. There's a chance the Colts could be a double-digit win team. If Rivers can play at a level that we saw 2 years ago or even close to that, I think the sky's the limit for this football team. With that offensive line, that running game, and a better quarterback than what they had last year. And the defense, my goodness, you got Buckner on the inside. If I'm a Colt fan, I cannot wait for the start of the NFL season because this might be as good a chance as they've had in a while to make kind of a push in the AFC. With things getting tweaked a bit with the New England Patriots, we assume taking a step back as the force in the AFC.
I think so, too. They're going to be as good on both sides of the ball as we've probably seen in a good 10 or 12 years or so. I think there's every reason for a lot of excitement this year.
All right. Colts picking up Eason, Pittman, and Taylor to help that offense. We'll come back with rapid fire still to come. Sean's going to do a little breakdown on the Notre Dame women's basketball team and what their roster is sort of looking like 2 years from now with two high-end guards wanting to play for Neil Ivey. That conversation is coming up. It is 628. Sean and Darren with you. Sports Beat from home on 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app.
Rapid Fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett.
Darren, Alohi Gilman ended up being drafted in the sixth round by the Chargers Saturday. He could have played at Notre Dame for one more year if he wanted to. So do you buy or sell that he made the right decision to declare for the draft this year?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of your statement. What player are you talking about?
Alohi Gilman, drafted in the sixth round. Did he make the right decision by declaring for the draft this year rather than coming back for another year?
I don't see how he could help his value by coming back another season. I think he has some coverage liabilities that affected his draft status. A high football IQ player. Notre Dame, of course, used him down in the box a lot, physical player. But I just think, Sean, in today's NFL where you need to have safeties and they need to have some better coverage skills than maybe 10 years ago, I think there's a limitation there with Alohi. Now, I would never count him out. He is one heck of a smart football player, so I hope he makes it with the Chargers, but I think he fell down because of concerns about his coverability.
Yeah, and I mean, he is 5'10 as well. I don't think that helps him, just some of the measurable type stuff. And I looked at his vertical jump. It was 4 inches shorter than the top safety, Xavier McKinney. So, I mean, there are some things there, but there is so much intangible stuff that I think will help him out in the long run. But if you just look at, I absolutely think that he made the right decision to come out to declare for the draft this year, because if he had come back, it would have been his sixth year in school, because remember, he played for the Navy prep football team his first year out of high school. Then he played at Navy for essentially his freshman year, and then of course he had to sit out a year here at Notre Dame, and then he played for 2 years at Notre Dame. So this, it would have been his sixth year if he had come back for one more year of college. So I think he absolutely made the right decision. I think he'll be on every special team for the Chargers next year. He'll make a ton of tackles. He'll eventually get some opportunities at safety, and I still think that he's really got the potential to have a nice NFL career in the long run. I do think, and I tweeted this over the weekend, that I think that I'm not saying he's going to be an all pro and that kind of thing, but I think that ultimately he'll be thought of as a guy who was a steal for where the Chargers ended up getting him in the sixth round.
Well, you and Brian Driscoll have been really all over this. You feel like he's going to be a surprise player, and I'm not as positive as you guys.
A little more cautious, yeah. That's...
I'm a little more cautious again. Smart football player, physical, tackles well, but the coverage liabilities might be the difference in him being a full-time starter in the NFL. We'll see. I hope I'm wrong.
And I was reading something, and I've read so much stuff and seen so much stuff, I can't remember where it all came from at this point, but there was something essentially where he was saying, look, because they did put him down on the box and defenses were identifying, or offenses rather, were identifying him early and staying away from him, so it took away from some of his chances to kind of show more his last year on film, some different things he could do. So I still think that there's still something there for him. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. Okay, fill in the blank on this next one. From a TV presentation standpoint, this year's NFL draft was blank.
I thought the presentation was amazing. There were very few hiccups over the 3 days. The only thing I didn't like, I thought ESPN tried to make it entertaining for the football fan and possibly the average fan or someone that's not a big football fan, because they told a lot of stories about the players, which I thought was fun. You still got the highlights, the evaluation of the players. I thought they went a little overboard on some of the family stories they were telling about T. Higgins of Clemson. They put on the screen that his mother had been battling drug addiction since 2007 or something.
Yeah.
And even though he... relevant? Was like, you know what, it's okay. I thought that was a little much. They got into too many tragedies, I thought, with some of these young men. They made it like, hey, this guy was drafted, and he lost his father, and,
right.
And it was a little much at times.
Yeah, it's literally like the third thing out of their mouth, the second or third thing, and they were putting up graphics with this stuff on the screen, and I agree. I just think that it went too far with some of it. Why does that have to be one of the two or three first things that you're talking about with these players? I thought it went overboard with that. If if whatever they're talking about, whatever this tragedy happened to be, was sort of a propelling point for some of these players and drove them to where they are, then I guess that's one thing. But I just thought that it was too much. They really went too far with it. And maybe it's kind of because of what you're talking about, because I know that they were talking about what we're trying to humanize these guys because of the record viewership that they had. Maybe they thought there was going to be more of a casual kind of fan watching, and so that they needed to appeal to some of that. I don't know. I definitely thought it was too much. But just from a straight up what we saw otherwise, I mean, I thought there was a lot of good stuff. I did miss just from a TV standpoint, when you have those big crowds there, either cheering and booing Commissioner Roger Goodell, all that, the environment is definitely different. I did miss some of that stuff. Roger Goodell was flat out worn out by the end of the weekend because he was announcing all the picks rather than just what he usually does, where by the second round, he's got all these guest pickers and stuff coming in, and so he's not doing so much, but he was worn out in his basement. I thought we were going to see maybe more of the glitches. I thought from a pure production standpoint, ESPN did a great job with what they were able to do. It looked more studio quality than I thought it was going to look. Other than that, I mean, I thought it was kind of cool to see some of these coaches and GMs being able to do their business at home and kind of seeing some of their thoughts. It's like these football guys who are so used to putting in these killer hours were kind of actually like, huh, turns out we can do some of this from mm-hmm. home. We don't have to be hunkered down in our bunkers in our offices all the time. So I thought just all the way around, it ended up being a pretty good job that ESPN was able to do. Okay, who deserves more draft criticism? The Bears for drafting Cole Kmet, which we've talked about on this show, with their first pick, or the Packers for not only trading up to get a quarterback in the first round and ticking off their franchise guy, Aaron Rodgers, but not drafting a wide receiver over the entirety of the draft?
Well, the answer for me is the Packers, and it's centered around this fact. The pre-draft feelings of the quarterbacks lead to my decision. When you think back to Brett Favre being 35, he was kind of kick around retirement at that time. Yeah. And the Packers in the 20s take Aaron Rodgers. He was considered the number one or number two quarterback in that draft. And Alex Smith of Utah went to the 49ers at number one. Rodgers was being considered there. So he was considered a high-end quarterback, and with the way the draft fell, he dropped all the way down toward the end of the first round. Love from Utah State has never been, outside of Todd McShay believing he was better than Herbert, he's the only one that said that. So yeah. There was no guarantee that Love is going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. Rodgers was assumed he was going to be, despite falling in the first round. So I think there's a big difference in those storylines. Rodgers more well thought of than Love. The Packers needing wide receiver help, and they end up not taking a wide receiver in the draft, which was very, very interesting. They got him some running back help and offensive line help, but I just think the answer has to be the Packers, because unlike when they did this the first time around with Favre and Rodgers, Rodgers, I think, has more left in the tank playing at a high level than Favre did at that time. And plus, I just don't think there's a guarantee how good Love is going to be in the NFL. Unlike Rodgers, people thought this might turn out pretty well at that time.
Yeah, and you didn't just get Love where you happened to be down what was it, like 30 or 31, I think, is where they were sitting. They traded up to get him. The fact that they had to give up some picks to move up into that spot to get him, and then coupled with what you mentioned, the receivers, Davante Adams was their top receiver last year, a little over 1,000 yards. Their second leading receiver only had 477 yards. And I mean, this is, as we talked about for weeks, this was the deepest wide receiver draft in recent memory. And they did nothing to help out the current guy. Now, I guess I shouldn't say nothing. As you said, they went out and got A.J. Dillon from Boston College. Nice power running back. They added some offensive linemen, but they did get a tight end in the third round. But they got nothing to help them stretch the field. I mean, again, Davante Adams only had a little over 1,000 yards, and it was a receiving core that was just pretty meh all the way around. They really could have helped out Aaron Rodgers, and they just look like they're poised to take a step backward, and I already thought that they probably would this year, but they didn't do much to help out the number one guy. Okay, last question for tonight. The biggest uproar out of last night's Michael Jordan Last Dance on ESPN is Isaiah Thomas and the Bad Boys Detroit Pistons refusing to shake the Bulls' hands after the 1991 Eastern Conference Finals. Now, my question is not about whether it's, you know, who's right, who's wrong in any of this, but simply, do you miss the days, Darren, days like that when players genuinely disliked each other when they went out to play?
Honestly, it doesn't matter to me. I really wasn't into that stuff, nor am I today a fan that misses that type of activity. So I could really care less. I'm about the competition. That's just noise.
Well, but that's part of the competition.
Nah, it's not. That's just all blah, blah. That's all them just running their lips. So
I think the blah, blah is more the fan stuff, because now it's more the fans who truly despise either the other team or other fans or whatever. I mean, like this thing specifically with the Pistons and the Bulls, I mean, like I talked about in the My Five earlier, the stuff that was going on in this specific rivalry, the physical nature with which the Pistons went after Michael Jordan, it led directly to Jordan changing the way they did things, getting stronger in the offseason, going after him. Now, again, I don't care about whether they shook hands or not, but I think that there was definitely a different saltiness back in that time, regardless of sport, when it came to these rivals. And this all, of course, predates a lot of the free agency and that kind of stuff as well. So you had guys playing together longer and against each other longer, and I think it led to a lot of this stuff where we didn't have a whole lot of guys in the 80s and early 90s trading teams and moving around a lot.
Well, I sure enjoyed Larry and Magic, and they didn't get in all that stuff.
Well, and I mean, Magic and Isaiah were kissing each other, for that matter, when they were playing in the finals. So,
I'm just not into disliking my opponents. Like, all of my teams, there's really one team I despise, and that's the Montreal Canadiens, and that is a long story. But otherwise, you know, even in baseball, as a Cardinal fan, I don't dislike the Cubs. I don't dislike the Brewers. I have a little something for the Reds in the past because they like to start beanball wars, but they haven't been relevant in years, so I guess it doesn't matter. But I guess I just don't get into that stuff. So all the other jabbering that goes on, I guess it's great for some fans. Doesn't matter to me.
Well, and I guess ultimately, like, today we act like everyone has to get along. Like, and now the sportsmanship thing, the shaking hands and all that stuff, I completely agree. That's like, I was always taught when you're out there on the field, you know, like when it was football, knock the other guy on his butt, help him up and shake his hand when it's all over with. But we act today like everyone, like it's a requirement that everyone has to get along off the court once it's all said and done. And I just think that there's some genuineness to the fact that some of these people didn't get along. Because I'm sure there's a lot more people who don't today, but they hide it differently because of just the era we live in with social media and instant video and all that kind of stuff. I like sort of the genuineness. Now, I don't like the Pistons, but I don't mind the fact that a lot of these guys, and Jordan as well, Horace Grant, all these guys who were talking about this last night, they're unapologetic in how they feel about these other guys. I like the fact that they're not hiding their true feelings.
Okay. Fuel for your fire, I guess.
There you go.
All right. That's going to do it for Rapid Fire for tonight, 6:47. Sean, a little mini breakdown of what the Notre Dame women's basketball roster may look like 2 years from now as two high-end talents are bringing their services to South Bend to play for Neil Ivey. We'll get to that in a moment. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. It's May Day for Michiana, a one-day fundraising effort by Midwest Family of South Bend and our WSBT radio group this Friday, May 1st, to assist the incredible needs during this time of uncertainty for the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Due to the many reasons during this COVID-19 outbreak, people are struggling. The demands on the Food Bank of Northern Indiana are as great as ever before. How can you help? Visit feedindiana.org and make a donation. A $5 donation provides up to 20 meals, $10 provides up to 40 meals, and a $25 donation provides up to 100 meals. Or the next time you're shopping at a local Martin supermarkets, pick up a few extra items and place them in the donation bin by the exit. Visit WSBTRadio.com for more information. Sports Beat on WSBT Radio brought to you by Budweiser, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, and Rossini's Pizza on WSBT Radio and the Sports Beat app. Sean and Darren with you, 6:52. So, Sean, this Irish women's basketball program has a new head coach in Neil Ivey, and in the first week, she has gotten two commitments from two elite guards, one from New York, one from New Jersey, both on the USA Basketball Under-16 national team in the summer of 2019. So when you think about the 2021-22 campaign, when those two players joined the roster, what is that roster going to look like?
Well, I was sitting here going through it today, and just as far as the top scorers from this year's team, Michaela Vaughn is the only junior among that group. The center averaged a little over 10.5 points and 7 rebounds this year, but when you're looking at not this coming season, but two seasons down the road, Samantha Brunel, Anaya Peoples, they were both freshmen. They were the two big freshmen on this year's team. They both averaged in double figures. Caitlin Gilbert, a guard, she's a sophomore on this year's team. She averaged 13.6. So you're talking about three players right there who all averaged 12.6 points or better this season. And then the incoming recruiting class for this year, they have five players overall coming in. Four of them are five stars, including Madeline Westbelt, the number 5 rated forward in the nation. She's the younger sister of former Irish player Catherine Westbelt. And then you've got another good point guard coming in, Allison Campbell, the number 8 point guard in the nation, and Natalia Marshall, the number 8 forward in the nation. So you've got two, between Westbelt and Marshall, you've got the number 5 forward, the number 8 forward, the number 8 point guard, and Allison Hayes, and the number 14 point guard. So they're looking like they are really getting the cupboard restocked with what they've got already coming in this season, plus the two big 5-star players that they've added, two of the top 16 players in the country coming in, not this season, but the year after that. So they're looking like a very bright future is coming up for the Fighting Irish women's basketball team.
Getting back to the norm.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds
exactly.
Like.
Exactly.
We'll finish off Sports Beat next. It is 6:55 at 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. Sports Beat for this Monday brought to you by Rossini's Pizza. Carry out, you're proud to bring home. Lincoln Way East in Mishawaka, across from Beeger School. The Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And by our title sponsor, Budweiser. Locally distributed by United Beverage of South Bend, who urges you to stay home, stay safe, and stay fun. Sean enjoyed it. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks to our producer, Jerry Janowski. I'm Darren Pritchett. It is 7 o'clock at WSBT South Bend.